All right, it's good to see everyone tonight. So glad that you're here. Hope you've been having a good week so far. And if you went with us on Sunday, how many of you got dried out? Are you still kind of soggy or what? That was kind of like a reality TV show. We all kind of started at the same place, and then it was just, it's gone after that, you know. And then on the trail and up the trail, and then all of a sudden it started raining and started pouring, and then it started raining real hard after that. And then my shoes are still trying to dry out. And did everybody make it back? I didn't do a head count. I just wanted to make sure, you know. it was a good time. It was good to see everybody and who braved it out. But I'm glad that we were able to go and had a good time with that. And it really is good to see you tonight. We do have a short business conference, and I do have a couple of announcements that I'll go ahead and give out here. So Brother Dale was telling me about the missionaries that we support. There's an updated list, and up here on the front bench, there's a stack, and if we run out, let us know, and we can get some more. But it has a list that you go through, but the back two or so pages, it outlines the amount that we support each missionary. So if you would like to have that information, we got that here. There's telephone numbers, email addresses, mailing addresses, different information. So this would be some good information for you to have right there. So I wanted to share that with you. Also want to let you know that I didn't get to actually speak with Brother Trent today. I sent him a couple of messages, not really anticipating that he might respond, but I was talking also to Sister Ruth, and she said that he was able to be released today from the hospital on the way back home. And so as I was picking up a prescription this afternoon about 4, I looked in my rearview mirror and he was behind me. So I didn't get to speak to him, but I did get to see him. And so he's looking good there and what have you. Somebody, I guess, was taking him to get a prescription filled. So I just wanted to share that with the church. And if you will, let's be turning to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Kind of taking our time with this chapter here. There's a lot in it. I love how that it gives many examples. It gives the examples that you see given here are examples, again, by Jewish patriarchs and forefathers. So those who would be well-versed in Jewish religion, Jewish tradition, Jewish history would have a good idea of what is being talked about here. And what I like about it also, too, as it is witnessing to not just everyone, but to the Jewish people, when you see yourself, you have a better illustration of what it's talking about if you can place yourself in that situation. And I believe that is why this is outlined to the Hebrews, written to them, so they can see illustrations of their own people. Those who you hold in high esteem, you would probably take to heart more something being said about them than somebody you don't know. And so when they go back and look, if this is being talked to, remember what God did for Abraham. If you're talking to a Jewish person that is paying attention to that or well-versed in it, it should mean a whole lot more to them. We look at about our American history, it'd mean more to us than it would to another nation. We just passed through 9/11. That probably means more to us than other nations. It's what we remember, what we know, part of our history. And the hurting or what we felt, often you remember how a situation made you feel, and you recount that, and I believe that's what this is supposed to do here. Tonight, we're talking about Abraham and his son Isaac when he was being offered up, and that is a very well-known account, but I definitely want to go back through that tonight because there's a lot that we can pull from it. Tonight, I want us to kind of see, again, this would be faith part 7, but I want us to see the faith in the substitute. That's what's really being talked about here and discussed is substitution. I would even say the doctrine of substitution. So if you're being substituted out, that means you're removing yourself and somebody else is taking your place. And so if you look at it that way, Brother Norman, then that your works would mean nothing because you're being substituted out for somebody else's. And so therefore, you know, works is not something that we could depend on to get us to heaven. There's a substitute. And I really thought about that. When I first think about the word substitute, I think about school. I think about when we went to school and if the teacher, if it was a hard class or something, or maybe a class that I wasn't having a whole lot of fun in, when when they said a substitute was coming, I was kind of excited because usually that meant that it was kind of a free reading day, or basically you get to hang out with your friends a little bit longer, do something usually. That's kind of what it was. Now, sometimes you get a substitute that might be harsher than your teacher, and you'd want the original back. And so there's different ways to look at a substitute. And tonight I really just pray that the Lord will bring this out, because he's the substitute. I was kind of trying to look at some other things and not trying to be all sporty on you, but I know there's probably some baseball fans here, and I'm not well versed on baseball. Sister Mildred and Sister Sandra tell you I'm not well versed on softball. Been trying to play softball a little bit at work, but still trying to learn all the rules and all that there. But how many of you heard of the term pinch hitter? You probably know more than what I'm going to say more about it. But, you know, when a pinch hitter is called up, it's what I read by definition. It's like, look, this really matters. We need to really have a good hit here. We don't need to mess this up. And this one that's next in line, let's just face it, they're not a good hitter. And this game is on the line based on what this person does. The outcome is based off what this person does. Is there anything we can do to try to have a better outcome than what we're going to have with this person? And so what they can do in turn with that is call in a pinch hitter who is a stronger hitter, a stronger batter, somebody that's going to give them the better outcome. And as I read that, Brother Dale, I thought, I think that applies very well in what we're going to be talking about tonight. We see here Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verses 17 through 19. Again, just kind of breaks off the little points here, going by each example of faith that I believe Paul, the author here, is trying to relay to the Jewish people, whoever's reading this, but I believe it really is talking directly to them. But verse 17, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac thy seed shall be called, according that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. And so we go back and we recount this. I guess a week or so ago we were talking about by faith how these people died in faith, not receiving the promise, but remembering the faith that was given for Isaac. And we remember the part, you see, his only begotten son. You say, well, what about Ishmael? Well, Ishmael was not the seed of promise, the son of promise. That was the son of the flesh. That was when they tried to take it upon themselves to help God make something happen versus waiting on him for him to fulfill. And God is reminding him here, this is the route that I chose for you to go. This is the promised one. Now, you talk about extending faith. You've seen some things. If you're waiting on something to happen, you're waiting on God to do something, that's a stark contrast in relation to you doing something yourself and God telling you to do something. Sometimes waiting might be easier than doing. Sometimes we might try to put things off versus doing. There is such a thing as procrastination, but when the Lord tells you to do something, he does expect for you to do it at that appointed time and that appointed place. And that's what Abraham had found himself here. That's what he found himself realizing. Now is the time, and here is the place. And we'll see that here in Genesis chapter number 22. If you will, let's just go ahead and turn there. I want to go through these verses here. Genesis chapter number 22. So we see, as you're turning there, we see that God made these promises to Abraham. And I believe while Abraham and Sarah were skeptical at the first, when they later found out and realized that they received the son, they knew that that was an answered prayer and God had answered that prayer. Then now I would have to say, I couldn't even imagine what was going through Abraham's mind when he's saying, Lord, you promised this son, you promised that the nation, that my seed would be as the sand of the sea, as the star of the sky, and now this promised being, the way that it was supposed to take place, now you're telling me to sacrifice. God, that really doesn't make sense. I think I've probably said it But I'll say it again because it really needs to be said here. I believe if God is really testing your faith, whatever it may be, to whatever level that may be, it's going to have to make no sense to you whatsoever. I mean, what makes sense to us logically, we're not extending faith when it makes sense. We're just not. It has to be one of those situations that, Lord, I just don't see no way. I don't see it. For me, in my life, I remember, again, I use this a whole lot, but when I surrendered to preach, I felt like I was in a place that I had nowhere to look but up. I felt like nobody else necessarily could help me, so to speak. It was like I have to depend on God. It's like he put me in a position that what I needed, he taught me and he showed me, Jason, I'm the only one that can supply that for you. And he was extending to me, and when you are in a position like that, it is probably one of the most uncomfortable things you'll experience. But by God's grace and by his help and by his mercy, if you follow through with him, he will make it probably the most blessed situation that you will go through. Only because you, when you see no way and you have no way and you know that you can't produce it, when God produces it, you know who it came from. He gets the credit for it. He gets the glory for it. And when you see that, your relationship grows with him. And that's what it's about. He wanted a closer relationship with Isaac and, well, Isaac also and Abraham, but also he wanted to show this as a picture of substitution. How important substitution is. They finally get their son of promise, and now God is telling them to sacrifice their son, his son. We see this here in Genesis chapter number 22, verses 1 and 2. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. That means to try him, not to tempt him to do something evil. We think of the word tempt sometimes to mean tempt us to do evil or tempt us to do bad, but this is also means a trying. To tempt Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here am I. He's being obedient. He wasn't running from the Lord. He wasn't afar off or anything. He answered him. He said, Here I am, Lord. That's saying I'm available. If you're going to do anything for the Lord, the first thing that you're going to have to do is make yourself available. You can't fill your life with other things or put priority over any other thing. The Lord has to have priority. And he gets Abraham's attention very quickly here. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac. Makes no mention of Ishmael here because that wasn't the promised son. You think about the sons of God. If you're saved, you're a son of God, a child of God, but there's only one begotten son of God, Jesus Christ. He's the one. If you look at it that way, trying to look at this, take thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest. He didn't have to tell him that, but he reminded him that. Don't you know that Abraham loved him? That thou lovest, and get thee into a land of to the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon the mountains which I will tell thee of. He's saying again, start out with your son. You're going to offer him as a burnt sacrifice, but travel and I'll show you where. Now, what kind of trip would that be? You see, the son, unknowing, son didn't know, didn't understand what was going on. You'll see that here in just a minute. Didn't see and understand. And he's taking him here and they're traveling, and what was on his mind the whole time has to be, Lord, what are you going to do out of this? This is a mess. I mean, what are you doing? You made this promise. You fulfilled this promise in his birth, and now you're taking him away. I don't understand this. Does that make any sense to anybody? I mean, honestly, tell me if you have a view, because if that was me, I can make no logical sense out of it. I think if Abraham could make logical sense out of it, he wouldn't have to extend the faith and the trust that he had to. He had a choice. He didn't have to do it. He could have disobeyed God. He could have said, No, we finally got this far. What's that going to do to Sarah? We can't do that. Lord, I can't do that. There's got to be something else. But you know, he said, Here am I. And immediately he started being obedient. He was on a different plane with God than probably most people, where most people would try to argue logic with God. He said, Here am I. I'm following you. I'm going with you. See verses 3 through 5 where he's being obedient. Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and clave the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went into the place of which God had told him. He was being obedient. He's going exactly where God told him to go. God doesn't do things haphazardly. He has a plan and a place, again, a date and a time. We try to procrastinate things we don't want to do, but finally there's that point that God expects us to do what he asks us to do and what he's commanded us to do. That time comes. This is not waiting on him. This is following him and doing what he's saying at an appointed time. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come to you again. Now, that's either faith or defiance, right? Why would he say that? Why would he say, we're going to do this and we're going to return again? You're either extending faith that God is going to do something to allow this not to be what it seems to be, or you're going to get there and you're going back out and you're going to bring him back. I mean, how far are you willing to go with God? That's a question that we all have to answer. How far are you willing to go with him? I like the word worship. You know, you think maybe singing and things, you know, really being passionate about something. This is what it means. It means to adore, to pay divine honors, to respect. But it also means to honor with extravagant love and extreme submission. I would say, I know Abraham loved Sarah, but I would say he loved Isaac more than anything on this earth. And what was the one thing God said he wanted? That one thing. What would be more precious than the promised son that God had promised you that you thought you'd never have? What would be more precious than that? And God's saying, I'm more precious than that. I'm more important than that. I know it's hard for us to understand and see, but we have to love God the way that he loves us. Israel is the apple of his eye, how he loves them. He wants us to love him the way that he loves us. He wants us to love him the way that he loves us. That's a special relationship that he's calling for there. To worship, to extreme submission. And it would take extreme submission to do that. I don't know what we will face in life and things that we come up to, but are going to come to, but I know that there's going to be decisions that you and I have to make. And that's something that we're going to have to come to. But worship and come to you again. He's showing extreme faith here. Verse number 6, it says, and Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and then went both of them together, just the two of them. The young men stayed behind. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here am I. You see how this conversation is going. Here am I, my son. And he said, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? You see, he is finally kind of putting some things together. He had no doubt seen what a sacrifice looked like before. He knew the ingredients of a sacrifice, but now that one thing is what is missing. I see the fire and I see the wood. And as I was looking at this, trying to place myself in that position, you know, it wasn't until the night that I got saved that I fully understand that I was lost, understood that I was lost. It kind of made sense to me that night. As I was reading this, church, it really came to me. You know, that night I saw the fire and I saw the wood. But I was like, where's the sacrifice? I'm not good enough. I'm not capable enough. I'm not enough. I can't get to heaven like this. But I saw the penalties of it. I saw the penalties of hell. I saw and really understood and realized in my heart how serious this was that night. I had to do something. Isaac is saying, I see the wood, I see the knife, I see all the instruments, I see all these things, but where is this lamb? You're kind of concerning me now. You know, that's the place that you and I, or those that have been lost, or that are lost, or those that before being saved have to get to that place. You have to understand there has to be a sacrifice. You see that substitution? Here's the thing. The sacrifice could never be you or me. The sacrifice could not be Isaac. God was testing him. God was trying him. You see the typology here. He took his only begotten son. He was laying out that only begotten son, the most precious thing to him. And he was testing Isaac with that, testing Abraham with that. And again, it says here, and he said, let me get back to the right place here. And again, it said here, verse number 9, they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there. Let me get to the right place. Here am I, my son, and he said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Verse number 8, and Abraham said, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. And so they went both of them together. You know, I think they both were extending some faith at that point. I think they both were wanting to see what was going to take place. Think about Abraham and what he was expecting. I think he was in a place, God, I don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to do something. God, you've never let me down before. I've seen some hard times and some things that we've went through and we've made mistakes, but Lord, I think I've learned from some of those, and if that's what you're really telling me to do, I'll do it because you're telling me to do it. That's extreme submission. That's extreme benevolence to God. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. You know, Isaac knew then what was going to take place. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Now that's probably the most paramount situation that you probably read in the Old Testament. You think about it. You think about, we read about Daniel and what took place in the lion's den. You take what took place in the fiery furnace. But this is him getting ready to kill his only son because God told him to. That's what God told him to do. God was testing him and God was trying him with the most precious thing in front of him. I don't know how things, you know, will be what we will face, but I tell you, there's times when God is telling you to do something, you just have to go the distance. I don't know how else to say it. When he really put you in that position, he had a choice. He could walk away, but why was God telling him to do this? Have a choice to be obedient or not to be obedient. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and he took the knife to slay his son. Look at verse number 11, how things change here. The angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham. And he said, here am I. I was like, yeah, finally. Finally. Let's stop where we're at right here. Here am I. Yes. You see, we knew that God knew what he was going to do. He's omniscient. He knows. But the one here, that didn't know was Isaac or Abraham what he was going to do. Abraham, he had the choice to, again, be obedient or not. And he chose to be obedient. He said, here am I. Verse 12, and he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God. Now I know that you truly trust me. You know, that why would God try you if he knew you trusted him? I think sometimes we need to see and learn, and God will put us in positions to see how far we're going to trust him. You say, that's generic preaching. That's generic teaching, Brother Bill. That's just, I'll tell you what, how many of you facing something right now? I mean, go ahead, facing something right now. How many of you are facing something right now that you don't see a way through? I mean, honestly, let's just be honest. I see situations. I see situations every day at work. I don't know how this is going to work out. At home, I don't know how this is going to work out. Friendships, relationships, different things you face. It's like, I don't know how this is going to work out. You know, that could be God testing you. God trying to do something amazing for you. And the one thing you have to do is trust him and follow him through it. The devil wants you to tap out and quit. He wants you to say, I'm out. This is too much. You know what? I've seen this happen before. I've seen things happen before, and we can only take on so much. And yes, I know, God, this is your standard. And yes, I know, God, this is what you're asking. But I'm going to tap out. You see, Abraham could have done that, but he didn't. He received the reward for it. You know, that's the, what does the Bible say? He will not tempt us above what we are able. That's a unique verse that doesn't, not right here in this scripture, but that's in the Bible. I mean, God is not going to try us above what we are capable of handling. And I see that, and I know we're not perfect, but that tells me if God is trying us and tempting us, and if we fail, it's on our behalf, not on his. You're not going to say, God, you pushed me too hard. He said he wouldn't push you past what you could endure. But we don't know how much we can endure. You get pushed. Sometimes you don't see a way out. You don't feel a way out. This situation here, I believe what he was saying is, Lord, if I kill him, you have the power to raise him up and you'll bring him back. So I'll do it if that's what you want me to do. Just to be obedient for you, to you. It's an amazing thing. God might put you in situations you never thought you'd be in. Things you never thought that you would see or what have you. But I tell you, he's calling us to be faithful and trust him. He's calling us to trust in him. Calling us to trust in his substitution. That's what this is about tonight. And he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For I now know that thou fearest God, seeing that thou hast not withholding thy son, thine only son, from me. You're willing to go the distance with me, is what the Lord is saying here, the angel of the Lord. And Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. You see the doctrine of substitution being given here. I go back to the illustration. If we think that we can be good enough to get to heaven, we can't. I'm saying that might sound like, well, that's crazy to think that. There's a lot of people that think that. I've talked to a lot of people like that. Remember the rich young ruler? I've done all these things. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a mean person. I've never killed anybody. I've never stole anything. I've never this. That's what people will throw up. But if you're lost, you're not going to make it to heaven. You've not trusted into the substitute. You've not trusted him. And that's the importance of what you got to see. It's not within ourselves. It's all in him. It's not in Isaac. That ram was the substitute. God provided that substitute. God provided himself a lamb. How did he provide himself a lamb? You look at today. God provided himself a lamb on the cross in Jesus Christ. So that's where you really get down to the thick of it right here. You think about it. What he saw, it had to be flesh. God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. He's a spirit, but there had to be a flesh and bone that could burn, that could die. That's how a burnt offering was on the cross. It had to be somebody. You know, when God looked around, who's going to be good enough? Who would I accept in place of this entire world? Couldn't be any of us because we're not perfect. Couldn't be any of us. God, when he looked down, he said, you know, I love these people so much, this earth so much, that I will place myself in a physical body and I will be that sacrifice. I will be that substitute. That's powerful. You know, you read about the substitutes in the Old Testament. It was somebody, a person, picking somebody else and choosing, or something else, that animal, spot without spot and blemish, picking out that sacrifice and offering that sacrifice. How many people in the Old Testament or in the New Testament said, I will be that sacrifice? How many? There's only one. God will provide himself a lamb. He provided a substitute for Isaac, but he himself a sacrifice for this entire world. He's the one. He's the lamb, as the lamb slain before the foundation of the earth. Now you see, as a Jewish person, I'm not picking on them, I'm just saying this is who this is written to, the Hebrews. As a Jewish person, they're going to have to understand and see who that lamb is. Not just who he is, but what he did. What he did on the cross. You see how he took place here, and I'll finish reading this out here. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. That means God will provide. As it is said, to this day in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, by myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son. Remember the promise that he made to Abraham through Isaac? What was that promise? The multiplying. That in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the shore, and the seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And it goes on down and it talks about the different ones, the different part of his seed there. I won't read that. The rest of those, you can read that for yourself. But you see, when Abraham was being obedient, God did his part. God saw him through. That was probably one of the ultimate test of faith or of trying that you'll find in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament. But you see, when you look back and you see that comparison, you see how important it is, how important the substitute is. That substitute meant everything to Abraham. Everything to Abraham. And I have to say, it meant a whole lot to Isaac, too. And that means a whole lot to me. You think about it, I'm telling you, if you're lost, you're listening, you're here, if you're lost, you have to see you will pay for the punishment of sin if you don't have a substitute. That will be required at your hand. You will have to pay that price unless you believe in the substitute. That's Jesus Christ. You have to see yourself in that position. I look back again and I think about how Isaac's saying, I see the fire and I see the wood, but where's the sacrifice? That's a real place to be. That's a question every lost person has to understand and ask themselves. Where's the sacrifice? Who's the sacrifice? But I'll stop there tonight and appreciate your good attention. So much to be said in the book of Hebrews. I appreciate how it goes through so much of the Bible and it covers so much. And I know, again, it's written to the Hebrews, but how much we can pull from it. And I'm very thankful for that tonight. But that's the lesson. We'll stop with that and we'll have our, I guess what we'd say, brief business meeting tonight. But I think it'd be good for us to open in prayer. And I'll ask Brother Curtis.